Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everybody. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, Donald Trump's numbers are looking a little...
We're going to Nashville.
Oh, okay. We're going to plug stuff first. I thought we would just tell people news.
I don't know. You're just getting straight into the poll numbers. Yeah. And the next level supposed to be have a little bit vibier. It's the next level, you know? I don't know. It just felt like I was going on to Chris Jansen's show there for a second. And so I just thought, you know, we're going to Chicago. We're going to Nashville.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, why did you do Nashville first?
Because I'm so excited about Nashville because there are some special guests maybe coming, TBD. I'm just going to tease that.
The Chicago venue is so big. That I Great. Want to talk about Chicago, because if you are a listener in Chicago or in the surrounding area, we're going to need you to come, because this is an 800 person venue and we've been selling out shows that. Left and right, but we got to sell out 800 this time. So
easy.
Tell
come
your
on
friends,
to Chi-town.
Tell your wives, come out and see us.
Come to Chi-town. There's a ball. Go see a ball game. Will there be a ball game, JVL? I don't even know. Is it baseball season yet?
Yeah. There's going to be a Cubs game, Cubs Great. And Rockies. Our plan that week. We're going to be there. All right. Can we talk about the news now?
Sure.
Do we have to? I just don't like, what's the rush? The news is bad, mostly.
Actually, there's is some it, good news.
Okay. Is it bad?
Let's hear it. Let's hear the good news.
So, when in October of last year, when Kamala Harris was leading Donald Trump, the Dow was over 41,000. Today, the resistance level is at about 40,000. Dow is sort of struggling to make that. It popped a little bit yesterday after our Treasury Secretary told a group of private investors that the China tariffs were coming off in a matter of days. They're going to be drastically reduced. And this is all happening after...
That feels like a totally like the forgotten man. Somebody like it really has concerns about Main Street.
Yeah.
You know, like we hear a lot about how they have concerns about Main Street, not Wall Street. And that's why the Treasury Secretary was in a room of private bankers giving them a little bit of a winky wink. Things are going to be okay, you know, before the market went back up.
That's so they could run back to the office to call Cletus and let him know.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
That's my understanding of how this works. This happens after 2 weeks in which Donald Trump said he was going to fire day late Jerome Powell or whatever nickname he's given to the Fed chief, and then said suddenly, I'm not going to terminate him. So we have a little bit of a market rebound yesterday after hours in overnight trading and futures and into today, because the market is back to thinking, well, maybe Trump doesn't mean anything. The market may be getting fooled, but who's not getting fooled are voters. Two polls I have for you. On the question of Trump's approval of his handling of the economy, Reuters Ipsos has him at 37% approval. Yikes. And YouGov has him at a minus 10 for not overall approval of handling the economy.
Yeah,
Sarah, would you like to do a victory lap?
Yeah, he's at 44 approve, 53 disapprove. This is not what I want to say about this, because it's not a victory lap just because his poll numbers are going down slightly. Here's what I think is a lesson, though, that people should take from this, which is, and because the numbers that you didn't read is actually, to me, the most important one. which is 53% of registered voters say Kilmer, Abrego, Garcia should be returned to the U.S. 30% oppose. And then 50% of registered voters in the same Economist YouGov poll say that Trump's handling of immigration is too harsh. But in this Reuters Ipsos poll, Trump's handling of immigration, he's got a 46% oppose to a 45% approve. And so that is down from March when 49% approved and 44%, only 44% disapproved. And this is the lesson, guys. Make something an issue. Go at his strengths, his perceived strengths. You know, everybody who was running from Abrego Garcia, and look, Trump's always, he's had good numbers on the handling of the economy and on the handling of immigration. Those are the things that he's always sort of untouchable on. He is screwing both of them up. People are noticing. And I got to say, the way that everybody thinks at every minute they need to be a political strategist versus deciding what's right or wrong, right? Deciding what's right or wrong, and then believing that people can be convinced of the correctness of your argument and going on offense and pushing it, people are being convinced of that. And so the good news here to me is not the individual poll numbers. The good news is you can make a difference with people's perceptions of Donald Trump and the job he is doing. Now, he's doing a lot of the work for you by doing a terrible job. But
really quite bad.
But it, do not shrink from this. Do not be afraid to fight. This is a moment for offense. He is on his heels. That's why he's reversing himself on all of this stuff. He is being pushed into a retreat mode. So let's keep pushing. Paramount.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Shots fired.
Shari Redstone. I thought Shari Redstone was like a VC corporation, like a venture capitalist, like the name. I was like Andreessen Horowitz until yesterday when I saw her picture, and I was like, "Whoa!" It's like the bad person from Succession. It's all of them, but they're trying to do a merger with Royco and whatever, and the lady that owned the other business. It was like that lady. It's like, wow, she could be on the new TV show with the four rich guys that I will not be watching, who go to the mountains or whatever.
I saw the ad for that this
morning. Anyway, speaking of rich guys, can I go back to the economic numbers for a minute, JB?
Please.
Because Scotty Bessent, our just brilliant gay Treasury Secretary, gave a speech here about an hour ago.
Tim, he was either going to get Treasury or the Kennedy Center. And so the Kennedy Center gig was taken. So he had to go to Treasury.
Rick got that. All right. So, you know, Scott, he left his house with all the doilies. He doesn't have any cheap TVs or anything, because that's not the American dream. And he gave a speech to the Institute of International Trade and Finance. I want to read this for you. The U.S. and China have the opportunity to strike a big deal on trade. Mm. This is an incredible opportunity. I think if Bridgewater founder Ray Dalio were to write something, he could call it a beautiful rebalancing. I saw this before he came on, and I was like, was Trump on stage? Like, was it like a panel between him and Trump, and I went and looked at three different articles just to make sure I had this right, and I was like, no, Scott Bessent now talks like Trump. He's like, we have a new big beautiful trade deal coming. I'm going to randomly name check a rich guy. Everybody, calm down. The markets can calm down. Don't worry. Ray Dalio, who's not in the administration, it's Howard Lutnick and a weekend talk show host. But it's, if Ray Dalio saw it, it would be very beautiful. And it's like, these are guys that are panicking. This is a total panic move, I guess, is where I want to go with this. So like, they feel like that they're sending out the top gay to like try to calm the markets by letting them know that everything is going to be okay. When it's like, I guess the markets are going up, but I don't know. You know, we haven't seen the big change in the bond markets, which unfortunately we have to talk about these days. But like, I don't know why that this little comment would give you that much confidence, right? That's like this is, you know, it is really kind of like we've corralled the toddler king.
for a couple of days. All right. Don't worry about it. We're going to do a beautiful deal. And it's like, well, what if he gets mad again? What if she says something mean about the stake at Doral?
What if he finds out that on the major social media channel in China, what is trending right now is, I believe, Trump caved, or Trump, like, there's some like Trump back down. When he finds that out, because we are dealing with somebody who basically, both he and Elon are like this. It's like, I will start a trade war if you make fun of me, China. He is, make no mistake about it. Trump is short-term caving on his China tariffs because the market may be going up and down. And I do think there's a little bit like market green, Trump happy, market red, Trump sad, like going on here. But the dollar is weakening. The dollar has dropped 10%. We do have this problem with the bond markets. Like, the fundamentals of the economy are getting unwieldy. Most people are starting to predict recessions that are entirely of Trump's doing. We're seeing the beginnings of the layoffs from the tariffs, the beginnings of freakouts from the business leaders. And so, yeah, they're getting panicky, even though the stock market rebounds. Like, that's a short-term little, like, let's all tickle things to get a little happier. It's not solving the underlying problem.
All right. I'm going to say something dark here. And maybe after I do, we'll just decide Sebastian has to cut it out. Okay, and it'll never see the light of day. But if we were thinking through what are events which could reverse the economic problems right now, and how would the markets react to them? Not saying I want this. I'm just thinking through. God forbid.
I try to think. What could he be thinking?
Donald
about?
Trump were to visit his doctor
regulatory
tomorrow.
Regulatory announcements? Are you going to mention red tape?
Sir, the doctor should say, with tears in his eyes, sir, I'm so sorry. You have Konecki in your Shvankas, and you've got 5 days to live, and I'm so sorry. And that news leaked that Donald Trump had a terminal disease. How do we think the markets would react to that? Because I have to think they'd line go up.
Well, I think they might go down a little bit briefly for just panic about what he might do.
Really?
Concerns. You know what I mean? Like a short, I think there'd be short term instability.
After Shvankas exploded, then they'd go up.
If I'm going, you're all going with me while I've got the button. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. If I heard that he had 5 days left, I'd be holding on for dear life for those 5 days. You know, like, I'd be buying gold, you know, putting money under the bed. Let's see. Let's make sure we can get through.
Living
the other
in a
side.
Bomb shelter with a lot of Campbell's soup. Yeah.
Yeah. To withstand but then the after nuclear that, fallout. I think the line would go up. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is a, because again, I want to emphasize, this is a man-made economic disaster. This is not a, you know, like, well, there was all this risk happening inside the system and nobody realized it.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Did you see about the CEO meeting this week? This is another thing about our toddler
King. Oh, so the big box stores?
Yeah,
the
big box stores. CEOs of Walmart, Target, Home Depot. Maybe a couple others went to the Oval and were like, sir, we're going to have empty shelves, like your people. Like, they're going to be shot. They're going to be coming into the stores and looking for the lawnmower that they want to buy for summer or whatever. You know, the you know, the really huge box of goldfish. And it's like, we don't have that anymore. Like, we're not, we have supply chain issues now. We have tariff issues. And there are some that are reporting that that was a part of the reason why he was chilling out yesterday again in the Oval Office. And again, it's just like, this is so insane that these are the same people that were like 3 months ago. It's like vibe shift. Like, oh man, like we're about to be an economic rocket ship taking it. We're a coiled spring that's just about to explode. We got the business guys are back in charge. That was 3 months ago. 3 months later, they're like, please, sir, we might have bread lines at Target. I mean, talk about what a bad bet by the titans of industry.
But they can say retarded and the P word. So are they still winning or not?
They can. Does the CEO of Target usually say the P word that often? I don't know.
So if Trump does, because again, he's only said he's backing down, or he hasn't said, Bessent has only said that he would back down. If Trump were to back down, would all of the people who've spent the last 2 months explaining why the tariffs are great and why we had to endure short-term pain to get long-term gain, people like Orrin Cass, will Orrin Cass then come out and say, this is good. All that stuff that I said we had to do for the good of America in the long term, well, now that Trump has decided not to do that, that's the best choice too. Will Orrin Cass say that? Orrin, what do you think there, buddy?
I think that Orrin will go on board with whatever he said. I will say, though,
Are TV producers going to keep putting that asshole on television?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm not, again, it's my father that's in the finance industry, so this is not financial advice. But, I think that they will, come around. But here's the thing, like, the amount of tariffs that have been put on right now are so great and so debilitating that he could dial back a lot and still like have like a massive middle class tax increase on everybody from the remaining tariffs. And Trump did say in the Oval Office yesterday, he's like, I'm going to be nice or something. He's like, I'm going to be nice to the Chinese. Like, I'm not going to be that tough. So he did backpedal a little bit. But it's like, if you just go back 3 months and you said to the CEO of Walmart and Target, and said, okay, you think the plan is extending the Trump tax cuts and cutting red tape. Here's what the actual plan is. In April, Trump will go to 145% tariffs on China, and then he'll be nice and bring it back down to an additional, 18% tariff on China. And we're also going to have some tariffs on the EU that are above what they are. And we're also going to tariff certain things from Canada and Mexico that aren't part of the USMCA. I think all those companies would be like, that is a worst case scenario. But the thing that he might retreat to is what I think a lot of big business folks and not the Orrin Casses of the world, but like the more free, the Wall Street Journal type folks would have said this would be,
Tim,
be a
disaster.
That's
the art of the deal. You see, Trump was able to teach those people that wasn't the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
That's
he
the
didn't
art
of
the
deal.
Deal.
The Chinese, the art of the deal, his own,
yes.
his own supporters
the
in the
deal
business
his base.
Yeah, got it.
He art of the deal, his base.
What do you think happens in that meeting where all those CEOs come and talk to him? Do you think he goes, oh, well, this is brand new information. Like, I didn't know that placing these tariffs would cause this level of disruption. Like, what do you think? What do you think his position is?
I mean, he literally said it was like March 30th, he I couldn't care less when confronted with, sir, this is going to cause prices to go up on auto. I think it was about cars. It was automotive prices. And his line was, I couldn't care less.
Yeah. I do think part of this strategically is about not letting him get away with screwing things up and declaring victory, because he will, right? I mean, to JVL's
Always.
Point about people who run cover, right? This is one of those, like, Trump creates the problem and then Trump acts like he solved the problem he created and declares victory. And I think that we have to keep making the case about how bad this, like, because the market, here's the thing, him bouncing this back, it might calm the markets short term, but like, there's still this massive level of uncertainty now. Like, the uncertainty
we still have capital
around
flight
businesses. Yeah,
right.
Totally.
America still has an enormous problem with capital flight. You see it in the bond market. You see it in the dollar. And the structural damage is done. Now, there could be more structural damage, but we have done the implosion of America leading the world rules-based trading order. That's gone. And that doesn't come back for generations.
I was trying to imagine this image you said, Sarah.
Yeah.
And so to help myself, I wanted to see what the CEOs looked like. So I kind of want Sebastian to put it up on the camera. I'll send it to him just for the YouTube people. We've got Doug McMillan.
He's an African-American gentleman?
No, white guy. Oh. I mean, like, these guys look like all of them could be at the Bentonville Country Club and just fit right in. This guy went to Bentonville High, so he's kind of rose up the ranks there in Arkansas. We got Brian Cornell, another white guy. No need for DEI, actually. Don't worry. No worries here. All white guys. No, this is not a problem with DEI. Brian Cornell looks like before he was at Target, he was at Best Buy. Is Best Buy crushing it? I don't know.
Yeah, Best Buy is actually back.
They have. They've really? Turned it around. Yeah.
Wow. I wonder what he did at Best Buy to turn that around. When was the last time you were in a Best Buy?
I forget who there was some other guy came in and saved Best Buy.
Ted Decker? Ted Decker, he looks nice. He wants to be a man of the people. He puts on the Home Depot smock, you know, when he goes in. That's nice. It's just like, and this is just, I the hubris. You can just imagine the old white guy hubris of this situation, of these guys going in there and just being like, bro, you know what? I thought you were a businessman. And it's like, no, sorry, man, that helped the Best Buy turn around. Donald Trump was not a businessman. He decided whether or not to fire, you know, who was the guy with the big clock?
Flavor Flav.
Flavor Flav. He decided whether or not to fire Flavor Flav in the boardroom. That was his job, actually. He did not turn around a big box store. So you're going to have to do some hand holding.
It's
quickly,
really
just
something.
Real quickly, let me tell you how Best Buy came back. It realized it was Amazon showroom. I listened to a long interview with this guy. It was a really fascinating story. Okay. And they basically made it so, number one. They did a price comp thing where, like, if somebody came in and they were like, well, I saw this cheaper on Amazon, they would be like, we'll match that price. Number one. Two, then they would come install it for you. And also their Geek Squad, like the help that people provided, became like a big thing that people like needed to come into the store for. Anyway,
I love that.
It's a cool turnaround story.
It's a good capitalism
story. What they did is they empowered all sales floor people to immediately override prices. And so people would go in, they would just show you their phone with the Amazon picture. Yeah.
Seems like whoever did that turnaround would have been better as either president or the head of Doge than the reality TV star and the person whose brain got broken by Twitter. Just like something to think about in the future. If you're going to kind of put forth a technocratic businessman to lead the country.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that guy, and I'm flanking on his name. I think it was the same guy who turned around Panera, although I could be wrong. I think that he does not like the Nazis though. And so really, do you want him in the federal government?
That's a good point.
I mean, he would never do a kidding, not kidding, Sig Heil salute.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Can we talk about the Jose Hermosillo story?
Sure.
Which I put on our show map. So we have
definitely read the show map.
So this is a dig at me about whether or not I looked at the show map.
me and Sarah are very prepared for this, having read the show
map. I do spend time on this now, Five Guys. And so we have the story today from Jed Legum of Popular Information, and he spoke with Jose. This is a 19-year-old American citizen who was detained by ICE for 10 days because they did not believe he was a U.S. citizen.
Why didn't they believe he was a U.S. citizen? What was the issue?
Well, he is Hispanic.
Oh. Mm.
And they picked him up. He didn't have any ID on him.
Okay.
And so they just arrested him. They arrested him because he didn't have his papers.
Yeah.
And then just put him in detention. And it's and then it's it does seem as though the government, I know this is going to shock you guys, but the government's account of this seems to be dishonest. Because the government says that he claimed he was from Mexico and that he was in America illegally, and that that is why they detained him.
It's funny.
The government's position is, we picked up this guy outside of a hospital where he was trying to get a ride home, and he told us that he was here in from Mexico illegally. And that's why we took him in.
My favorite thing about this is, I'm sorry, I feel bad to laugh about this, but it was like, these people are so fucking stupid. A couple of the MAGA straight shooters I follow on social media, you know, who do like the, you know, post hoc rationalization for the stuff that MAGA people do.
Like Orrin Cass?
Yeah. we're posting this yesterday. The government's statement. They're like, see, fake news, New York Times and Judd Legum. This is why you don't jump on these stories until you get all the facts. Look at the real facts of this story. And here is his sworn testimony that he was from Mexico. And I was looking at that and I was kind of like, why would he have said that he's from Mexico? None of it makes sense. And it does make sense if you just assume the ICE people were lying to cover their ass. And that he thinks this is a guy with a learning disability. But otherwise, I don't know. Maybe was it like in their theory of the case, what would have been this person's rationale? He was like begging. He just wanted to be deported so bad. He'd seen some movies about Mexico.
So he went up to the Border Patrol office. This is what happened. So he was in Tucson, had a medical emergency, was taken to by ambulance to a hospital because he had a seizure. After they released him following treatment, he sort of comes out of the hospital and was like, yeah, I don't quite know where I am. He sees Border Patrol officer and he goes over to ask the guy for help.
Don't do that.
This is, I'm now reading from Judd's piece. I saw a car and I asked him for help, Hermosillo said. He told the officer he was staying in Tucson. The officer said, quote, you're not from here. Do you have your papers? When the officer asked where he was from, Hermosillo told him that he's from New Mexico. He is from New Mexico. The officer then accused Hermosillo of lying. Quote, don't make me out like I'm stupid, the officer said. I know you're from Mexico. And after that, he was arrested.
He's like, no, sir, New Mexico. That's a state. That's the bordering state. Might help people like this? Maybe we should rename it New America.
New America. I had the same thought.
That'll really solve all these sort of misunderstandings. So we then have part of the government's case is that they released a sworn statement that they said Mr. Hermosillo signed. In fact, it is signed with his first name. And we now know that Hermosillo has learning disabilities and dropped out of high school and has difficulty reading and writing. And so he signed his first name because he didn't know what he was signing. This is government as Gestapo, is it not?
Yeah, no, yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't want to like go too far with the fascism talk, but like I'm picking you up. And I say you're lying, and because you look Mexican to me and you don't have your papers, nobody can travel anywhere without their papers.
This is government is fascism. I will say, so Sarah's going to disagree with this. So I'm going to pop in first before I'm going to be the radical. My only issue with making this story blow up in the same way as the El Salvador stories are concerned is I read this story as ACAB. Like, I've been pretty unsympathetic to ICE. Agents in under every administration throughout all of history, and I don't know. I think that this is kind of the type of thing that ICE people do. All cops are bad, which is this is like a lefty
Wait,
saying.
What is ACAB?
All cops are bad. It's ACAB. It's like a lefty.
Yeah,
thing.
Well, that's the safe for work.
I know. Sarah's.
Don't tell Sarah.
And now Sarah's going to get mad at me for saying this. But like, I don't really literally mean that all cops are bad. What I mean is that. There are a lot of cops in the past. This is not the first time in history. This is not during the Trump administration where there has been an immigration officer who racially profiled somebody and treated them poorly. Speaking of which, I want to get to the Omar Amin story next. But anyway, Sarah, I don't know if you
all cops are bad. I do think this, and I
not all cops.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. That seems reductive and unhelpful to discourse, but the this sounds like a guy, like this ICE agent who is like, I would concede, like they are now under a regime where they know that they would not face harsh consequences for doing something like this. And so they're much more prone to do it. But I would say Gestapo tactics are when you have an organized, like the dictate is to go make everybody show their papers, and which is, I think, not where we are. And I want to be, I do think it's important.
Courthouse raid. When you see the courthouse, you guys see that story that I sent you where.
Listen, hold on. I think that I think Donald Trump is way out on the way that they are trying to do immigration enforcement. But I think that saying like we're in Gestapo territory is, I don't like this stuff because I think like at some point, I want to be able to say we're in Gestapo territory when I think we're really in Gestapo territory. Right now, I think we're in Donald Trump's immigration policies are illiberal.
Fair.
And the
That's
way
a
that
very
they're.
Fair point.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well taken. All right, Tim.
Can we talk about Omar Amin really quick?
Yeah.
Go ahead. On this point, because I wrote about this 5 years ago during the first Trump administration, which shows you this is, which actually speaks to Sarah's point. This is a slow burn. It's a slow brew. It's been bad for a while. It's getting worse slowly but surely. But in 2020, when I last wrote about this, I had encountered it because the lawyer was also in the Bay Area and I'd met her at something and she told me about this story. And this was like, this guy is in jail in Sacramento. And it's like based on a lie. He's an Iraqi refugee that came to America like a fucking long time kind of ago. I don't have it in front of me right now. 15 years ago, maybe. And probably more, actually. And he went to Utah first, and like, had a big family, and had a job, and he went through traditional vetting. He didn't come across the border. It wasn't a CBP-1 thing. And then he moved to Sacramento, and somehow somebody in Iraq, like some terrorist that we had captured, like gave a list of names of people that he had collaborated with, and this guy's name was on it, even though this guy was like fleeing ISIS or what, you know, whatever the group was at the time. They had no other evidence besides that he was on this thing, and they kept him and like they made a big deal out of it. Like when they arrested him, like we arrested an ISIS cell, you know, that was hiding in America. And the guy like kept trying to like, it's hard to like prove a negative, disprove a negative. It's like, I wasn't ISIS. Yeah. Like it was like a fucking decade ago and I'm on some terrorist phone. He's like, I don't know. He's like, they were going after me. And so anyway, he had not had any issues in America, not had any legal issues since he'd been here, but he was just kind of rotting away in a prison in Sacramento. And they kept trying to send him back to Iraq, but the lawyers, he kept winning in court because he was like, no, it was the terrorists were coming after me. You can't send me back to Iraq. So it's kind of similar to the Abrego Garcia situation, right? Where he was here in this, well, yeah. Abrego Garcia was free, but he was in a prison, but he was here in this kind of in-between state where they couldn't deport him because, you know, his life was at risk, but they weren't going to, you know, give him citizenship. So anyway, this news yesterday came across the feed and I was like, fuck, I hadn't thought about this guy in a couple of years. We sent him to Rwanda. It's the first example of the Rwandan government accepting people. We cut a deal, I guess. The Rwandans cut a deal with the Trump administration. And this is going to be the first of, I guess, many relocations to a third country for people that are here in this country and that have legitimate asylum claims. We don't want to deport them to their home country because they have legitimate asylum claims, but we don't let them stay here. So we're going to send them to Rwanda. And Omar Amin, who has a big family of children, they're living in Sacramento. I guess they're going to have to decide whether they live without their father in Sacramento or whether they relocate to Rwanda. I mean, that is fucking insane. Like, what? Like, this is, again, I just, like, we can do the rant I've done a million times, but it is just the most fundamentally un-American thing I can possibly think of is like somebody that was fleeing oppression to come to the land of freedom, the home of the brave. And we're like, nah, we're going to send you to some totally other country where you have no family, you don't know the language, no family, no nothing. And good luck.
Is he in jail there or they just send him there?
Here's what we know so far. The U.S. Embassy cable reads that Rwanda's motivation for accepting Mr. Amin, spelled incorrectly, and subsequent third country nationals is to improve U.S. relations and show it can advance the America First agenda. Was an official statement from our government. And yeah, they said they don't to speak on the deliberations or decisions of the Rwandan government. So I guess TBD on that question.
I mean, this does speak to the underlying immigration thing was never really about illegal immigration. Like, the illegal immigration was just the pretext, the casus belli. What this really is, they don't want any of these people here. They don't want people claiming asylum in America. They don't want.
Well, except for the white South Africans.
Yeah, I was going to say white South Africans, we can. Sure,
because things are really bad for them, you know. It really is, it's the racism. Sarah, you hate it when I say that. But it is kind of the racism, isn't it?
First of all, I'm not going to argue that racism is not part of what's happening here. We do have a broken immigration system, though. Like, this is the problem, is like, you sort of lump in Stephen Miller, who is absolutely, and this is where I will go into, like, he is a Goebbels, like, racist, horrible human.
Allegedly.
Yeah, sure.
See, if you just say allegedly, you can say anything.
Okay. Then allegedly. Actually, no, objectively, I think he's a bad guy. That is my personal opinion, that he is a bad guy, and a bad guy of significant magnitude in his lack of humanity. But I don't think that most Americans are like Jason Miller. I think most Americans, actually, who support the deportations of criminals, what?
He said, I don't think most Americans are like Jason Miller. And I said, yeah, because they have chins.
Oh, yeah. I meant Stephen Miller. I get the two.
It's okay.
The two horrible MAGA Millers confused. But anyway, the Stephen Miller thing, I think he is a racist. I think that a lot of Americans have a problem with the fact that the border is not secure.
Sure.
We have lots of people here illegally. When people do commit crimes who are here illegally, we don't always have a system for like getting people out. I mean, people want this stuff dealt with, and I don't blame them.
I know. And you hate it when I say this. There has never been a time when the U.S. border was secure and where the system was good and it worked.
I disagree. The border crossings under Biden, until Biden closed the border, like, there's a massive magnitude of difference between the two. Like, you can do border enforcement. Is it imperfect? Sure. Is it different than just like not doing it? Yes. And you can't just not do it. Very few Americans want that. I'm not saying there aren't some people who are just like, nope, open borders, let everybody in. But if you want to have in this country a social safety net, a meaningful social safety net, then you have to have a mechanism by which people come into the country legally. I want America to be a place for asylees. I want us to be a place where people can come. But we do need an immigration system that is, like, not insane. Yeah.
This disagreement is not a disagreement because we're talking past each other. It's a disagreement about who we mean by these people. Like, are these people all the people that voted for Donald Trump, or are these people that are the people that are enacting the Donald Trump immigration regime? And that these people that are enacting the Donald Trump immigration regime don't want anyone to come here. They don't want any asylum. Like, we all agree on that. They don't want any asylees. They don't want refugees, except white South Africans. And I think that is abundantly evident.
And maybe people who are really good at computers. Remember,
And I guess maybe the farm workers now. Oh. We might have to bail out the farm. We got to do this patchwork style one time. Oh yeah, and the guys that work in Mar-a-Lago and Doral.
That's right.
We can't get rid of them unless they have tattoos.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Got to move on to Tesla. Tesla did their quarterly earnings call yesterday. For scheduling purposes, they did it after the market closed. I think that was probably just because they couldn't find time in Elon's schedule to get him in during. I think that's why they did it after the market's closed.
Were the earnings good?
Net income was down a touch. 71%. The actual sales of vehicles down 20%. Just 20%. Very good news. the part of the business that runs on carbon credits, which is to say government welfare, that is still doing okay. So still getting a lot of money from their government subsidies. It was not the most forward-looking, happy call. The people from Tesla said that one of the problems that they had was they've been closing production plants in order to retool for refreshing some of the product lines and tariffs. No mentions of Elon turning the brand toxic or anything like that.
Hmm.
And Musk then said that the sales of cars aren't actually important because the future of the company is self-driving taxis and bipedal robots, humanoid robots. I have so many things to talk about with this. Tim, you and Sam did this a little bit yesterday. Sarah, the first thing I would like to say is that if following this call, Musk said that he would be stepping away from Doge starting in May. Would you like to spike this football as well? Because this is another case of if you fight, you can make them bleed, metaphorically.
Yeah. And this is where, look, they're in retreat. Guys, this is where I'm like, I want to talk to CBS and Paramount right now, just because you are on the precipice of trying to cave so you can get your little deal merger done. Don't do it. Don't cave to these guys. They're weak and they are in full retreat in every way. Now, Elon did say he's going to finish out this term with Trump, and he's going to still be involved in Doge part time, but he is going to return, 80% of his time or something, to Tesla, which great, I guess. Although, yeah, your point about the fact that they are not dealing with their earnings are off. They're not selling these things because the people who would buy electric cars hate Elon Musk, and they're not going to unhate Elon Musk.
The problem isn't that Elon's not spending enough time around the office.
That's right.
Their spin seemed to be, if Elon was just at the office more, then the earnings would be way up. But that's not it. There's a line from Ross Gerber, who runs a wealth fund. He said, look, his time is very valuable, and I think Tesla needs his attention. But it doesn't change that people don't want the Tesla brand. I don't know how you fix that, which is the most obvious thing in the world.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't want Elon Musk robots.
Yeah, I was like, the biped robot thing is freaking me out. The Doge thing, it is worth mentioning that, like, I know these guys don't care about the law or whatever, but like legally he's required to leave in like 37 days because he's a special government employee, and that gives that protects him from FOIA and like a bunch of other stuff. So I mentioned this to Sam, but I just think it's worth, as we are processing all of this, like Elon isn't always telling the truth. I know that that's not breaking news. And like, there are some, if I'm Elon, I'm thinking I have to leave in 130 days anyway, or I have to fight this thing. The fucking shareholders are pissed. They want me to care more about Tesla. I can go back in May for a couple weeks, whatever, I'll still have my little incels running around and they will be able to call me and I'll be able to, send them DMs at all hours of the night. And when I'm not sending DMs to women whose wombs I want to take, and then I'll come back again the 4th of July, right? Like, and we'll tear down a different department. Like, I think that like that to me feels just as likely as that, is that there's like a don't let the door hit you on the way out, Elon, it's been fun kind of thing. I think that feels and so I think some people were interpreting it like that, that it was like Elon and Elon and government, that time is coming to the end. And I'm not sure. I'm ready to celebrate the collapse of the Tesla brand and the stock dropping 50%. I'm not really ready to, think that like the end is nigh for Elon and the government.
Well, that's my question for you, Sarah. What do you think that the Doge project has basically hit the end of the road? Or do you think this is just a Potemkin, look, he can just DM all of, he's got his lieutenants embedded everywhere, right? And the question is, does Trump want him to stop destroying the apparatus of the government or not? Because if Trump wants him to keep doing it, there's no reason he can't do that while he's sitting in the Tesla boardroom.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, yes, there's him going back to Tesla because he wants to go back, but there's also maybe he got out of, like, for Elon personally, what he wanted to get out of this, he got out of it, perhaps. Like, he has access to all the information he wanted to have access to. They, you know, here's the thing, though. My guess is now that they're deep inside, here's what we know about Doge. It's not happening. Like, the cutting isn't helping. They're not saving the money. Like, the $2 trillion in savings that was ratcheted back to $1 trillion in savings, that now they've, you know, saved some much, much smaller number that is basically just people that they've fired, many of which they're now trying to figure out how to rehire because they actually do critical work that people need. And so, like, I think that one of the places that ought to be where we ought to go on offense as well is to demonstrate how Elon has not done the thing he said he was going to do, because otherwise they are going to pretend like they've had massive. He's going to try to declare victory. No. The only thing you cut was your own stock, bro. The only numbers that really fell were your shareholders' numbers, because you have done nothing to save the American people money.
He killed some Africans.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Like, he did real harm. Like, USAID being gone.
But they're rounding errors. Matters. Like yeah. the thing is, he managed to get people killed and to eliminate a lot of our soft power savings.
Right.
For things, but by the way, the amount that we've saved completely overtaken by the inflationary actions that they're taking and by what they've murdered in the dollar and its value.
Yes.
He's saving us, Jack.
Now, the interest on the debt. Every little tenth that the bond, you know, that the bond yield goes up, the interest on our debt is like way, it's going to cost way more than what the cost of USAID was.
We have got to hammer this particular point. He has been a net failure on the money side. He is saving America no money.
He's costing America money while also destroying American power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, this is, you know, this is the
thing. Jacob, I want to hear your take on Tesla. You always have good Tesla takes.
Well, I was really, so I went back and I did some looking on the full self-driving, because the first time Elon told us about full self-driving was in 2015. And he said that all Teslas will be full self-driving by 2018. He said within 3 years. That didn't happen, obviously. Since 2020, every single year he has promised full self-driving by the end of the year. Has not hit yet. Yesterday on the call, he said that by this June, which is like 9 weeks away, there will be full self-driving Tesla taxis in Austin. Okay, maybe. We'll see. But the robots are the funniest thing. Do you guys remember when he launched the robot?
No.
So it's 4 years ago. Yeah, he did a Tesla event. It was 2021. And he announced the Tesla robot. It was a big deal. Optimus. Get it? Get it? Mm. Like the Transformer? Yeah. And he had a guy come out in a bodysuit pretending to be a robot. That was cool. His robot. And last October, so again, we're talking like, 5 months ago? 7 months ago? They had a Tesla event in which they showed real robots, this time working and doing things.
Ooh.
And then it turned out that the robots were just being remote controlled by humans wearing like motion suits to make the robots move.
Mm.
So
it wasn't kind of like a Rosie in the Jetson situation quite yet.
He said, again, yesterday on the call, that they would be manufacturing thousands of these robots that would be working in Tesla factories by the end of this year, 2025. And that within 5 years, they will be producing 1 million robots per year. Yeah, bro. Sure. Cool story, bro.
I got a question. Why don't you think there are more people coming after him from inside the house? Is it just totally a cult there at the executive level at those companies? I mean, like, there's got to be, you know, anti-Trump mid to high level executives at these companies.
No, I think it's all cult, except maybe at SpaceX.
Yeah.
And the reason at Tesla, Tesla needs Elon.
Yeah.
Because without Elon, Tesla stock is worthless.
Right.
Right. It is only the meme stock power that is Elon Musk that makes Tesla stock valuable. And the robot stuff is bullshit. And Google is eating their lunch on robot taxis. A long time ago, 5-6 years ago, I had lunch with a very senior person at Google. And I was asking about their self-driving stuff. And he said, yeah, self-driving has been a nightmare for us. We got like 7 years into it and realized that the entire paradigm we were using was wrong. And we had to start over. And he said at the time, he's like, and the Tesla guys are still going on the old paradigm. He's like, I don't know when they're going to figure out that they're in a blind alley, but like they're way behind us. And he was right. Like, they are years behind Waymo and Google. And, you know, but the market just buys it.
I do think he's probably, for, you know, him and his meme stock stuff, he's done a lot of damage to that. I'm not saying there aren't going to be, you know, always Elon people and they're always going to think he has. And look, I mean, Starlink, here's the thing about his robots. I don't know tons and tons about his business. I do know he said he was going to put like a gajillion satellites up in space. He did put them up in space. And like he has, like he does.
Yeah.
So like I don't.
Well, SpaceX got governments to pay him to do that. This is Elon's genius. Elon was able to realize that governments would be too stupid to not pay him and allow him to create the satellite network for them.
Right.
Which is, again, it's just, you know, malpractice on the part of the U.S. government to become so, you know, indebted to this guy at the top of the gravity well. And he realized that governments would be stupid and would pay him to do these things. I'm not sure that counts. Like, you know, anybody could have done it given the amount.
Well, not really, actually. I mean, this is the one you hate to hand it to Elon, but like the government gave contracts, I think it was Boeing and SpaceX to do this, and only SpaceX did it.
Yeah, like, fair enough.
The company failed.
Fair enough. But I would
Boeing
say,
I'm sure Boeing has a CEO. That's a 62-year-old white man that looks like they could be at the Bentonville Country Club who didn't live up to it because of DEI.
But this is another, like, remember the Tesla takedown protests that kind of started organically?
Yeah.
I think none of this stuff with Elon happens without those protests. Like, it took the protests making, like, deciding we're going to make this guy and his brand toxic. And it worked. And, like, Sarah, it's just one more. It's you again. This is the fight. Stand up and fight and do something. Right.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think the protests sans the couple people who did bad, you know, damage. And you shouldn't do those things. But just the regular protesting. Yes. Although I do think he made himself toxic. Like even before the protests, like people were making bumper stickers for their Teslas to be like, I bought it before Elon's shit.
We've got stop Elon on the stop signs in my neighborhood. It's people spray painted Elon underneath it. Toulouse was asking me about that yesterday. She's like, what's Elon?
This is just such an example of somebody where, so his market were liberals who were trying to do good things for the environment and were willing to overpay for ugly-ish cars in order to start an electric car movement, which people have been saying for years is going to be a big environmental boon. So that's his audience. Well, those people freaking hate him now, and there's not enough Republican or like new Republicans over here who are in the market for a $300,000 electric car or whatever to make up for all of the college educated environmental libs who were buying his car. So he has destroyed this part of his business. I think this is like not a thing that comes back.
I want to get Sarah's bipartisan muscles flex in here. I floated this with Sam last night on the Bullock Takes feed. Go check out the Bullock Takes feed. But Sam, you know, as a lib establishment reporter from Washington, D.C., maybe didn't appreciate this idea as much as Sarah, I think, will. Which is, I see the beginnings of a big bipartisan opportunity here. First time in a while, which is we can cut the EV subsidies. We can get some Democrats who hate Elon, who look at this report and say the only reason that his company has succeeded is like fucking viable right now is because of all the government subsidies he's receiving. And they can walk across to Chip Roy and say, hey, Chip, you want to sign on board with me with this cost savings bill, the Moskowitz-Roy cost savings bill, which will cut the electric vehicle subsidies that were passed in the woke Biden Green New Deal. I think that, to me, this feels like a winner.
No, I don't like it. Don't
I know
like
you
it.
Wouldn't like it. I thought Sarah was going to like it.
I do like it. Sarah. Wait, why does JVL not like it?
No, the reason not to like it is because the first movers always want to pull up the ladder behind them on these things, right? So this is like Amazon.
We're way past first movers, this. Though. Hmm? Hold on. We're way past first moving, though, now. We're way past
I don't think so. I think if subsidies got cut now, Tesla would be helped as much as hurt.
No. No way.
Okay.
I don't know, though. We'll ask Mike Murphy.
Ask Mike Murphy.
I'm against
actually going to pass. So anyway, it's more of a PR idea.
I'm just against subsidies, period. So...
I don't know. I've come around on a lot of this stuff. Like
tell
me about it.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I want to talk about going into hostile territory. Mayor Pete went into the Manosphere. Tim, how did it go?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've only seen one clip, but I'm excited that he did it. I'm excited to watch it. And it's interesting that it happened yesterday. That's why I wanted to cover it, because there's this guy, Andrew Schultz, who has a great marketing team, because he's fucking everywhere. I can't get away from this guy and his stupid mustache.
I've never heard of him.
Me neither.
Once you see him, you're not going to get away from him. He does a very good. He does all the interview shows. You guys aren't though. You guys don't TikTok.
No.
All my comedy, all my Manosphere stuff comes from TikTok now. They know I'm a 40-year-old man, and so I just get fucking Manosphere shit sent to me on my TikTok. So that's probably why. Actually, I've seen him everywhere, and you haven't. But anyway, I did a rant about him on yesterday on YouTube, because he was on one of these shows talking about how he used to be a liberal because liberals fuck. And, you know,
I saw this.
Yeah, he's like, Clinton was getting blowjobs in the White House, and like rappers were hanging out, and the liberals were cool. And like, now, like, liberals are like school marms, and they're mean to me, and they tell me I can't say retard. And
he never heard of Tipper Gore.
Yeah, the whole thing is stupid, which is the point of I did a very extensive rant on how stupid it was that everyone should enjoy. It's 13 minutes. It'll just really warm your heart over your lunch break tomorrow. So go check it out if you missed it. But the interesting thing is I did the rant, and like, an hour later, Pete sends out a tweet. It's like a picture of him on the guy's podcast. It's like, it's coming out tomorrow. And so several people like were messaging me and were kind of like, ooh, bad timing, like for Pete to do this after this guy said this is such an embarrassing thing. And I was like, no, opposite. Great. I'm so happy that Pete went on this moron's podcast. I've seen one clip where he's talking about being gay in the military. I think it's good to just have like a guy who just like talks about being gay in the military and, you know, isn't doing drag race references, you know, is just like hanging out and just being normal about it. I think that's very useful. I don't know what the rest of the podcast was. The fact that Pete is sharing it makes you think Pete thinks he did well. So, you know, I'll be checking that out and giving him a review on a future podcast. But I wanted to mention it because it's like we do plenty of nitpicking of the Dems around here. Like this does seem like it's starting to seep in. Like Pete was always kind of doing it, but we had Max Frost on Fox with Will Kane, where Will Kane was making fun of the Bulwark readers the other day. That happened. We had Yasemin Ansari. I think I'm getting her name right. She's a freshman congresswoman from Arizona. I was not familiar with her game until I saw her on Laura Ingraham last night. She was on talking about Abrego Garcia and did very well for herself, I thought, you know, handling that. I mean, Laura was obnoxious, and I don't know if any actual Laura Ingraham viewers were moved, but it was like, again, it's good to inject some real information in, like, you know, I, like, would the Laura Ingraham viewers have known that a Reagan judge, you know, said this without her going on to say it? Probably not. I don't know. I'm not a nightly viewer, but I don't think she was probably, you know, reading from Judge Wilkinson's decision on her show if it was not for Ansari. So anyway, I just, it's nice to give attaboys when people are doing the right thing. Like, I think this is, it's only matters on the margins, but it, they're, you know, it's important to do, and you might, and you, like, it is, you need to do it. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't think it matters on the margins. I think it's the ball game, man. I think that this idea of, oh no, we need to build our own media ecosystem. And I'm like, sure. If you want to build some of your own media infrastructure, fine. Obviously I believe there's good room for independent media companies like ours. But like, just go everywhere. Go on. Here's the thing. If you don't define your own positions, they will define them for you. If you just cede that ground, they will define it for you. And if you're there to say no, and here, the part of it is Democrats having the confidence to argue for their own positions, right? And I just have that confidence. Trump is on his back feet. These Republicans are on their back feet. They're probably like letting they want Democrats to come on so that they've got like a foil, right? So that they can find some way to, but like, no, you are injecting truth in those moments. And so now I will say though, it's one thing to go on Fox News, because like Van Hollen was on Fox News. In some ways I keep wrestling with the thing about Joe Rogan or like this guy I've never heard of. Like, I do think that Pete should go on all these places, but there is also a weird thing about like, do we have to, are these I saw this guy's little rant about how he just likes it, you know, when his politicians are getting head and everything else. And I'm like, do we have to like take these people seriously? It's a little bit of a tough.
I actually don't think, just really quick on JBL, so I don't think the Andrew Schultz thing is tough at all. The Fox thing, I think, is a little more complicated. I think it's useful, but it's a little complicated because the types of people that watch Fox are like pretty high info magas. And so it's kind of like, are you really getting those people? Like, there are a lot of people that watch Andrew Schultz that like have never heard from a Democrat except like on like at length, except for like whatever showed up on the news and whatever they got made fun of for, you know, on these podcasts, right?
It's
and
funny, so, because I feel the opposite. Like, I could see why somebody would go on Fox News, whereas like I'm like, Joe Rogan is an idiot. And I know he has a huge audience, and like, yeah, you could, no, like, go on. Like, I'm not saying don't. I just, there's a part of me that does chafe at the notion that to reach people, you have to talk to morons and act like they are valuable partners in conversation.
It's not a winning political effort to not win votes for any morons. I don't think, I know. Unfortunately. I think that's a minority position.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I think this is not as cut and dry as you guys maybe do. I am open to the possibility that what you guys are saying is correct. But on the other hand, this is like Gavin Newsom inviting Charlie Kirk.
Wrong.
His
not
podcast.
At all like that. Totally opposite. No?
Yeah, it's not like that.
Totally. Well, because please, thank you for bringing this up, because I will, I will address this question. Charlie is using Gavin.
Yes.
Charlie is going on to Gavin's platform, and there are people watching that are like, oh, the only thing I know about Charlie Kirk are like the five clips of him sounding as stupid as possible that my lib friends have retweeted onto social media. And now I listen to him talk for 45 minutes and listen to Gavin buddy up with him and listen to him talk about how, you know, kids are drinking too much these days. And, you know, maybe we should like try to reimagine, you know, a society that has more value, you know, and Gavin wasn't trying to press him on any of his crazy views. And all of a sudden people are like, man, everybody told, you know, there are at least some people listening to that are like, people told me this Charlie Kirk is a dumbass idiot, far right conspiracy theorist, but I saw him on Gavin for 45 minutes and I don't know, he seemed okay. Anybody seems okay, except for like really stupid people for 50 minutes. You know, Dan Bongino wouldn't seem that good. Marjorie Taylor Greene, but like anyone who is at all savvy can go on for an hour. And the people listening will be like, you know, I don't really like that guy, but they made a good point here or there. So Charlie was using Gavin. And this is the inverse. This is Pete trying to convince some of Andrew Schultz's audience that that oh wait, Democrats aren't as big of pussies as I thought.
Wait,
these things go both ways because everybody is always using both sides to attract an audience and to talk to that audience.
Here's the problem with what Gavin did, and it's why it's totally different. Pete is there to say, let me make my case to your audience, right? Gavin is there saying, I'm going to tell Charlie Kirk why Democrats are wrong about a bunch of stuff and Charlie Kirk and his people were right about them. If Gavin Newsom wanted to talk about trans kids not being in sports, a position I happen to agree with and that I think the Democratic Party would be wise to get off the table as quickly as possible, Gavin Newsom should have said something to a progressive. He should have fought with the progressive. He shouldn't have gone to Charlie Kirk to validate Charlie Kirk.
Great point, Charlie. You're so smart.
I think Gavin thought I think the logic of it was, I'm having Charlie on my show, and so a bunch of Charlie's listeners will come and listen to it. And I think the same thing with Schultz is that, thinks that a bunch of Mayor Pete's people will come, and it's trying to trade audience and stuff.
If they think that, but they're totally wrong.
Like, I don't know. It is a little weird to say Fox is not a legitimate news source, and also I'm going to go on Fox. Like, it's because it isn't. It's just a propaganda outlet. It's not a legitimate journalistic
enterprise. I agree with that. But also, who's this random dude? Who's this random podcaster? Like, why does somebody have to go on Theo Vaughn? Like, Theo Vaughn is just like a guy who shaved his chest on The Real World. But like, he does have a massive audience, and this is the world we're living in, where I think part of what you're doing is saying, I can sit and mix it up with these people, and I can demonstrate that I am normal.
I just think
also they're... just the numbers though, JB, like we have podcasts, you know this, like anybody who thinks that is wrong. Like I had Sam Harris, like just use Sam Harris. I had Sam Harris on. We did get a bump from him because some Sam Harris people came and checked it out. So that was the purpose of doing it. But it was like X 100,000 Bulwark listeners listen to it. And then 10,000 additional Sam Harris people listen to it. So like you're reaching way more of their people. If you go onto their platform, you're reaching way more of their people than the people you're bringing.
I guess I view this as more of a conditional prudential thing than a blanket, yes, you should always do these things. I think there are cases where you could say, yes, that show is okay. You can do that one. That, you know, just prudentially. But then there are other ones where you should look at it and say, no, you shouldn't.
Well, sure.
You shouldn't go on that show, right? Like that helps that show in some
way. Yeah, when Tim Pool invited me on his show, I was a hard no on Tim Pool's show.
Right, do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is...
I'm a hard no on Chris Cuomo's show, which is why he shits on us online. It's because none of us will go on his stupid News Nation show. I think
stop
it's good.
Stop drunk tweeting us, Chris Cuomo, please.
Yeah,
get
over
it.
It.
It's cool.
It's not going to happen. Sorry. Anyway, I do not think, I agree that it's like, you shouldn't, there are lines, but if it's people who are like comedians, who just have like,
yeah, I think I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Like Rogan, I think like, I can't, like my brain starts to leak out of my ears listening to Joe Rogan, but he has a massive audience and like, it's 3 hours and it's mostly him talking about like, if a shark and a gorilla wrestled each other, who would win? Like, I don't know. You can do that.
Yeah. I think I agree with that. I think you shouldn't probably go into OAN, right? And like, I just want people to in general be mindful that when you participate in a platform, you are giving something of yourself to it. And you might be getting something, but you are giving something. And I just wish people would be mindful of that. All right, guys, good show. Incredibly long show. We had a whole other thing to talk about, but we didn't even get
what
to
was
it
because
we had so many other... My little symposium that
to fight about this, and now we're going to have to do it on Secret Pod.
A symposium? We are going to symposium, and you're taking that away from me?
Well, I'm so glad I spend all this time.
I did read the show map. I read the show map. I forgot the other thing, but I read this whole thing, and I was ready to fight with you about it.
Well, you know, you'll have to wait to fight. Okay. Boy, do I have something to look forward to now. I get to wake up on Friday morning and have Sarah yell at me at 7:30 in the morning. That's great.
Yeah, you and my children.
That's fun.
Guys, we're coming to Chicago and Nashville. Music City. Possible special guest, Taylor Swift. She hasn't said no yet.
It's not Taylor Swift.
She hasn't said no yet.
I'm kidding. I'm very kidding. We'll put a link in the thing for it, but also go to thebulwark.com/events. Get your tickets. Please help us sell out Chicago. I'm all for clamped about
easy.
It.
Yeah.
We'll see y'all there.
Good luck, America.